Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach, KX93.5.
This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that the opinions expressed on any public affairs show do not reflect those of KX93.5, its management, or the board of directors.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna. This is Laguna Roundtable with your hosts, Righty Jim and Dr. Ari Grayson. And we are here Sunday, February 7th. It's about 58 degrees out, going up to a lovely high of about 78 degrees on a clear, perfect Chamber of Commerce kind of day. And no, it's not because of global warming. It's because of the Santa Ana winds. We are here. With me, of course, this morning is Dr. Ari Grayson. Dr. Ari, how are you?
I'm doing great. On my way into the studio today, past Main Beach, saw some whales breaching and some nice water spouts. Absolutely beautiful.
Well, what
Chamber
whales
of Commerce Day in Laguna Beach.
What whales want to do in their private business is none of our business. We won't judge them for that. But we've got a full show this morning for you on Super Bowl Sunday. That's right. The big game today between the Denver Broncos and the Carolina Panthers will be coming up at about 3:30-ish on CBS for those of you that want to watch. And actually, if you don't have anything to do, KX935 will be hosting a party, a big game party, this afternoon at Big Fish, 2 to 4 p.m. Mr. Whalen will be there doing his show over from the 2 to 4 segment. And once you come on out, you can meet some of the KX935 personnel and watch the game with all of your friends. But sounds like a great thing if you're not doing anything. I'm actually going to a Super Bowl party, and I'm sure that you've got something to do to watch the game yourself. Right, Dr. Ari?
I sure do. I'm going to watch with some friends. But if you get a chance, come on over to the event, and I think you'll have a great time. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yep. Come on over to Big Fish from 2 to 4. So. All right, let's dive into our thing. It's been a busy couple of weeks since we've been here, and we've got, let's see, we've had, I think, two debates, a caucus, and we've got a debate last night, and we will have a primary come Tuesday. So let's dive into the 2016 update. All right, so we've had the debate last night, not a whole lot really to go on with that. I only saw part of it. It's because, you know, Saturday night, people are out doing stuff. So let's go back to the caucuses, because those are probably the biggest impact. On the Republican side, of course, we had Ted Cruz winning by a couple of percentage points over the Donald. But probably the surprise for everybody, and somehow he managed to turn third into first, was Marco Rubio with the momentum that he's building. Dr. Ari, what's your take from the left of this?
You know, I think that's almost always the case when you have somebody who is back in the field and they have a bit of a more respectable showing than one might have anticipated. It tends to propel them actually to the spotlight rather than the person or persons who you expected to be in the front. And that seems to be the case with Rubio. He's really trying to parlay that into a victory for himself. The only person who came away, I think, out of this whole thing looking bad was, first of all, Trump, because they were expecting him to do so much better. But in the aftermath of the caucuses on Tuesday, I think, or excuse me, on Monday night, rather, I think, you know, we've seen some backlash against Ted Cruz for some of the things that have been coming out regarding his campaign teams pushing out information, erroneously stating that Ben Carson had removed himself.
Was planning to, right after
the caucuses on Monday. And it had come out that Cruz's team was robocalling and telling them that Ben Carson was exiting the race and to have people caucus for Ted Cruz.
Well, I don't think they were robocalling voters. They managed to be talking to their precinct captains. They put out a call to all 1,500 precinct captains. I don't think they were calling voters, because most of the voters would have been on the way or at the polls by the time that happened. So it wouldn't have been of any value to call the voters. I think it was they got the word out to all of their precinct captains.
Okay, yeah, I hadn't heard of being addressed as precinct captains, but that obviously that makes some sense there,
yeah.
Especially when you hear the calls. And so, you know, people were very upset about that on both sides. Ben Carson got into a terrible lather. I think he almost used the word darn at one point. I mean, you know, you would think the man had a cup of coffee in the last week or something from all the exuberance he was demonstrating there.
Ben Carson is a very good man, and I would never say a bad word about him. I'm not saying a bad word about him.
I've just, you know, whereas you could run all of your holiday lights off of the energy being generated by Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, I'm not sure that you could run the nightlight in your bathroom off of Ben Carson. Good man, but just doesn't get real high or real low, it seems.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's just that kind of person. You know, you're a doctor. You don't want a doctor that's getting real hyped up. So that's kind of the things that, you know, is what you want from a brain surgeon who's going to stand there for 12, 14, 16 hours picking around very vital parts of your brain. So that's kind of what you expect from the man. Yeah, on the Cruz thing, you know what? I mean, what's your take on it? Because I'm a little mixed on it. It's... You know, Trump wants a revote. It's not going to happen, Donald. Okay. I mean, you're looking kind of silly by asking for a revote. You know, that's not going to happen. It's the kind of thing that in some ways it's like, well, yeah, they might have gone a little bit over the line on it. But it's also, you know what? It's nothing that the Democrats aren't going to try to pull on the Republicans at some point. And that if Ted Cruz has got the chutzpah to go ahead and, you know, basically, you know, just put it all out there to win, that's the kind of thing that may be helpful for the party. But then again, some people don't like those types of actions.
Well, and I think especially in this political cycle where people are so anti-establishment and the kind of the dirty politics that we see taking place all around us, I think people would like to have a much more civilized discourse. You know, win on your ideas, not on trying to, you know, usurp somebody else's voters by pushing false information out to people who are, you know, coming there devoted to the democratic process and seeking to caucus. You know, I just think that it just smells bad.
Yeah. Now, if you really want to start talking about some of the questionable tactics also, you can look at your friends over on the Democratic camp. And didn't know that we were picking our presidents now based upon your ability to flip a coin. But that was interesting. Something that I learned from the debates. You don't need a good campaign strategy. You don't need a good, you need good fundraising, good communications. But now you need someone who's just darn fine at flipping a coin when it's important.
Well, and my question would be, was the coin Vince Foster for heads and Benghazi for tails?
Yeah, I'm pretty much, it was, yeah, basically Hillary on top and Benghazi on the bottom, and there's just no way Bernie was going to win that one. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that, funny, Vince Foster was the first thing that came to my mind when you win six coin flips in a row.
Yeah, certainly that's... it doesn't seem to be a perfectly weighted coin, but, you know, I think one of the
things... Oh, it's perfectly weighted for Hillary.
Well, that, you know, that may be the case, but, you know, of course, that's conspiracy theorists and kind of conjectionists.
Well, no, that's just math, actually, to tell you the truth.
But, you know, here's the thing, and it was funny because later this week I was trying to explain to some friends what the caucus process is, and I didn't even realize it until Monday's caucuses in Iowa, that obviously the Democrats have a very, very different set of rules and processes in place than do the Republicans. But it seems to me that the Iowa caucuses is a Democratic process at its most basic element, at its most basic level.
As in democracy, not Democratic as in the
correct
party.
Little d as opposed to big D. But
that's Dallas's big D.
Yeah, well, Dallas is not generally on my radar, but yes. But in any case,
by the way, for all those Texans, the cards go to never mind. Yeah,
They'll all come to me anyway. But I think, you know, when you're looking at the caucus process, you have something which, rather than an individual casting a vote for a particular candidate of his or her choice, you're going there and you're casting your preference. But you're in a group. It's not as though it's an individual vote. And then if your candidate, at least in the Democratic part of the process, if your candidate does not get at least 15% of the vote, then you are free to vote for either of the or any of the other candidates.
Well, you're required to.
Right. Okay. So you're going to candidate free to.
My understanding is they're going to change the non-viable to this, going to call it an O'Malley going forward.
Yeah, an O'Malley. Poor... Poor O'Malley, a nice guy, but obviously no longer in the race. In any case, so what winds up happening is each of the other campaigns has a chance to lobby that less than 15% group and try to persuade them to join their cause and their candidate in the next round of voting.
Yeah, I
think that's really wonderful. So
I think it's interesting. I mean, I think you're actually also allowed to, aren't you allowed to also try to switch people that are actually in the other camp too?
I think
the Bernie people can switch the Hillary people and blah and vice versa. In addition to basically trying to pitch those that are in the uncommitted or unviable, as we call it, the O'Malley camp.
Yes. But I think that the real value in the process is that people on each side have to persuade other voters to try and come to their side. And I really like that aspect of it.
Or they use the Vince Foster defense.
Yeah, yes. Well, at the end of the day, though, the hard count, the numbers, are not really as critical. What you want to do is, obviously, you want to get a general feel. It's more of a sophisticated straw poll than a true primary type of election.
Yeah.
It gives us a good sense. So you can declare one or the other the winner. And I believe just in seeing the outcome of that, what winds up happening is even if you win by, let's say, one vote, you get kind of a bonus number of delegates. Yeah. So even though it might be, 49.7% to 49.9%, the person who comes out on top will actually receive, rather than, 21 and 21 delegates for each, 10 more may go to one candidate, so you wind up with, 35, 25 or something of that sort.
Yeah, I think it turned out something like 21-17 and like four uncommitted or five uncommitted.
But now we've got on the heels of Iowa, we have New Hampshire coming up. That is a true primary.
Right, but we also have, remember, we have the ramifications. We have the O'Malley dropping out.
Yes.
On the Republican side, we had Santorum dropping out and endorsing Rubio. We had Huckabee dropping out. We also had Rand Paul dropping out.
That was the one that surprised me, that Rand Paul left this early.
Well, I don't think he's going to do any better in New Hampshire, so he saw the writing on the wall. And the now, those that are on life support, soon to be dead, are going to be one of the two of the three, in my book, of Christie, Kasich, and Bush. Whoever doesn't win out of those three for the deathmatch struggle will be gone probably after New Hampshire. Bush can stay in because he's got so much money, but he spent a lot of money. But for the other two, Kasich has been endorsed by the New York Times, and he's also been he's had some momentum going in New Hampshire. And that's the one that those three have really pinned their hopes on New Hampshire. And now Rubio, taking his momentum out of Iowa, is extending that in New Hampshire and is running in some polls. They've seen him running as high as second to Trump and knocking Cruz down in New Hampshire. So Cruz will go on, of course, because of his win in Iowa. Plus, he's always going to have the evangelicals, and especially Ben Carson still there. Again, don't know how much longer Ben Carson will be there. But then that will clear out the evangelical vote more for Cruz, which we may be looking again at a three-way race of Cruz, Trump, and Rubio after we get through maybe South Carolina.
It's a funny thing, because of all the people that you mentioned, I can't argue that they're not all going to survive. But the oddity seems to me is nobody's talking about Carly Fiorina. And the fact that we have a debate coming up tonight, is it? Or was it last night?
The debate was last night.
Last night on Saturday night. I didn't get a chance to watch that, unfortunately. But the fact that I think there are seven candidates on the debate floor, there's one person who's being omitted, and that's Carly Fiorina.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand
female.
That. I understand their rules and stuff, but it's like, you got one person, you're not going to do an undercard. Put her on the stage. What's it going to hurt you? I mean, someone could pitch in to buy the extra podium. She'll fund the extra podium. How about that for you guys?
Yeah, it just seems to me to be rather petty, especially since it's the only female voice on the stage. And it's not.
Well,
as
there's
though
still
her
more.
Views...
There's still more diversity on the Republican side than there is on the Democrat side. You've got two old angry white people arguing with each other, which we saw on Thursday night. And it's funny.
Yes, we did.
The Democrats spend so much time trying to protect Hillary from debates, and then when Hillary starts showing poorly, they can't schedule more debates fast enough to try to help Hillary out. I mean, I'm sorry, but isn't it supposed to be an independent process, or is this really the Hillary coronation process?
No, definitely an independent process. I'm not real pleased with that. I don't think the campaign teams should be driving the number of debates that we have. And I would have liked to seen from the outset more debates scheduled so that our candidates, regardless of the views that they want to present, have an opportunity to share their voice with the American people. That is the fundamental structure that provides support for our democratic process.
All right. So tune in Tuesday, or not tune in. Well, Tuesday, we're going to have New Hampshire. You can listen to me. Check my Twitter feed at Righty Jim. I'm doing political analysis on the Radio America Network for the debates and for the primaries now. And didn't do it last night because it was a weekend, but you can listen to me there and follow me along there. And I'll also be doing some live tweeting during the events on what I'm seeing and what I'm talking about. Let's move on to, we're going to cover some more of this in depth, a little bit more in depth in the topic section at the bottom half of the hour. But let's move on to President Obama visiting a mosque. Dr. Arie, what's your take on that?
You know, my feeling is it's about time. You know, Muslims are citizens here in the United States. We have we have tremendous population of Muslims across the world. I believe a Muslim population comprises roughly 20 to 25% of the world population. I think it's a good thing for him to be visiting a mosque. And, of course, it feeds some of the conspiracy theorists. But at the same time, it's very valuable for him to go and participate and hear other voices within our diverse American community.
Yeah, but it is the fastest growing religion in this country, for better or for worse. But it's interesting because the points that he brings up, he talks about the attacks on Muslims and speaking ill of Muslims and taking shots at Trump. But it's interesting because the Jewish faith has far more attacks, has far more hate crime, if you want to call that such a thing, or basically more people are attacked for being Jewish in this country, far more than there are being attacked for being Muslim. Yet how often you hear him speaking out about tolerance when it comes to the Jewish faith?
I certainly don't think that's an invalid point. There should be speaking out against hatred and violence against any group, any people, whether it's Muslims or Jews or the Baha'i,
a lot Druids.
Yes, certainly our friends, the Druids. Hate is not appropriate and in any form. And certainly, I hear a lot of time people talking about tolerance. I really dislike the word tolerance. I don't think we should be tolerating one another. We shouldn't be tolerating different points of view.
That's an interesting point.
No, we should actually try to respect one another. Tolerating one another is, to me, the very, very lowest threshold that you can have. But hopefully we can evolve.
It's funny,
to
for
the
me,
point
I,
where can,
I find because they're at the highest threshold when I think of Hillary, but so be it.
Well, for some people, just being able to tolerate Hillary, I understand that's a very tough threshold to cross.
Well, maybe we can get you and Ted Cruz to break bread together. How would that be?
That's good. I wouldn't mind having a sit down with him. I find him somewhat intriguing, let's just say. The way he's gone after evangelical voters in Iowa, but then having to pivot and shift gears to a much more I hate to say secular, but certainly not as fundamentalist in its general makeup in New Hampshire.
Yeah, just just less religious.
Or less overtly religious as the evangelicals. So it's interesting to see him pivot. I found it somewhat disturbing, some of what he was doing. But going back to the general question in terms of Obama going into a mosque, I think it was very important. I think it's a very scary time for our friends in the Muslim community, and we need to show them the kind of respect and support that they deserve and not have blanket condemnation for the actions of a few who are extremists.
Well,
there was a report this week that, our intelligence assessment is there's only about 20 to 25,000 ISIS fighters, which is barely enough to fill the Staples Center.
That would more than fill. Staples holds about 19,000.
Okay, but if there weren't a game there, we could certainly fit 20 or 25,000 people. But the point being, this is not a huge, group of people. We need to be very, very careful in how we fight them.
Well, but the problem isn't the size of their force in many ways, as it is their ability and their use of social media and electronic communications to reach out and to recruit people. A small force with an electronic, look at all these companies that probably like Uber that don't run off of large numbers of people, but they use electronic communications to the hilt and able to run multi-billion-dollar companies with marginal amounts of people. I mean, Uber's got lots of people, but considering the number of people that for the revenue that they do that like Walmart comparatively would probably have 20 times as many people for the same amount of revenue that Uber would generate.
Right.
Because of contractors and electronic communications and all things like that. And that's a problem with ISIS. You know, the San Bernardino shooters were radicalized via ISIS, via the web. They weren't, you know, they weren't ISIS fighters that snuck in. Now, they came in, but they came in on visas and stuff, and the one guy was born here. So they were radicalized externally, well, as internal people. He was.
Right.
She was brought in. But the point is that doesn't matter if there's 50 of them and they've got access to communications and 10,000 emails. That's 10,000 potential fighters.
That's a big footprint that they can have.
Yep.
But going back to the original question,
yes,
in terms
sorry.
Of the president going into a mosque, I think it's extremely important because in order to defeat the maniacs that we see in a group like ISIS, we need to make sure that we have good relationships and good communication with the people across the Muslim community. We have an LA police task force, which is connecting people in the community with people on the police force so that, you know, there is the kind of support, there is the kind of dialogue when people are hearing something that might be potentially dangerous here in the United States.
Right, but we have
the people in the Muslim community have to have the confidence in our local officials and in our police officers that they are not going to be targeted for the actions of a few extremists, regardless of the damage that they do, because there are so many good people across the Muslim communities. We need to have them on our side, comfortable, feeling that they are included in our processes in America, and that they're respected.
Right, but real quickly, the San Bernardino shooters, people saw them and were afraid to report them out of political correctness. So we can't be going so far down the line where we just tolerate, like you said, or endear ourselves to everybody and ignore the problems that are out there when they're right in your face, in the face of, especially in the light of political correctness. You have to basically report what you see, regardless. If you offend somebody, tough. This is about security.
Well,
this isn't about not worrying about hurting people's feelings.
Oh, absolutely not. I think the term...
Because there's 14 dead people because of political correctness.
Well, I think political correctness is a poor term to use in this regard. And I understand the temptation to do that because, you know, we do live in an area where, or in a world in which, you know, what we say can be so easily misinterpreted and be spun incorrectly. But I think more importantly, you know, even when we look at people who... we would want to testify against gang violence, against mob violence, whatever it is, there's the intimidation, there's that fear factor. I don't know that it's political correctness.
I don't think people are worried about, I don't think they're worried about offending gang members. They're worried about getting killed by gang members. These people weren't afraid of being killed by the ISIS terrorists. They were afraid of backlash. If it turns out that they were wrong and they were just Muslims, they were doing something that looked suspicious, but in the end didn't turn out to be suspicious. So that's a political correctness. Turning in gang members isn't political correctness, because that's perfectly politically correct.
You know, I can't speak to people's motivations for actions or their inactions, especially, you know, without talking to them directly. But I know, you know, there is always the concern that if I say something that somehow it's going to come back and backlash against me. But I think we do need to be prudent. We also need to be careful not to stereotype. And it's a very, very difficult line to straddle. And that's something that we're having to come to terms with in this country. Because terrorism and random violence, you know, whether it's, you know, some maniac who goes into a church in South Carolina or, you know, whatever it might be, just, you know, somebody hearing voices and you know, somebody who is suffering from some sort of psychopathology. You know, we need to be careful, and we need to alert appropriate authorities and let the professionals make those
right,
judgments.
Right, but it's never been politically incorrect to turn in white guys. It's only politically incorrect to turn in Muslims.
Well, I think it's scary on every level, and we need to make sure that when we see something that just doesn't feel right, we call attention to it. My wife and I, when we first came here to Laguna, we saw a bag abandoned at Main Beach, and we called the police because,
sure,
you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, I would do if I were in New York. And it turns out that it was just some clothing that was left for homeless people, and that's somewhat of a Laguna Beach tradition, which is lovely.
Yeah. But we still, in these day and age, you're still going to be concerned with it.
But we can't be afraid when we see something that is potentially dangerous to our community. We need to make sure we speak out and not worry about the repercussions.
All right, Laguna Roundtable, KX935 FM or KX935 FM. You can reach us on the web. You can reach us through email, LagunaRoundtable@gmail.com. You can reach me through Twitter at Righty Jim. And you can listen to us, www.kx935.com. Listen to our previous podcasts and to these shows going forward. All right, we are on Super Bowl Sunday, and we've got the Carolina Panthers going up against Denver Broncos. And Dr. Ari, do you have any predictions for today's game?
Well, you know,
which, by the way, folks, we do not endorse gambling, and nor do we endorse using our predictions. If you are so inclined to put money forward against others in a friendly wager that goes beyond just a handshake.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when Michigan and Ohio State play, I always bet a friend of mine, you know, the loser has to wear the winner's cap to work the following week.
There you go.
In any case, you know, it would appear, you know, Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers have a great team, and they are something seemingly unstoppable. I mean, Newton is just a tremendous athlete.
Yep, absolutely. Can't argue with that.
Very intelligent player on the field. Does a tremendous job. Led Auburn to a national championship in his senior year. So, you know, I certainly think that they are the favorites. But, you know, I also have a lot of friends from Denver. And, you know, on the one hand, I'd like to see Peyton Manning go out as John Elway did, as a champion, bringing a Super Bowl championship to the city of Denver. A lot of wonderful people there. So I'll be happy for either community, but my gut feeling is Carolina is just an awfully, awfully tough team to face this year, and they may wind up walking away with it. What are your thoughts?
Well, Carolina is, I think, favored by 6. Cam Newton, you know, seems like quite the athlete, and kind of hard to bring him down when he runs. And if you cover all of his backs and he pulls the ball down and takes off, and he's hard to get, and he throws a pretty good ball when his receivers are open. So I've got a pull for Denver. My 91-year-old mom,
she won't make Christmas dinner for you.
Well, no, no. But she, you know, she spent some of her early years in Denver, and since there's no team in LA, we don't count the Rams yet. She's Denver faithful. So, and it would be a great, you know, would it not be a great story for the ages for Peyton Manning to go out with a win and can just basically announce his retirement right there on the stage next to whoever it is for CBS, probably. I forget who it is, who does the commentary. But
could be Brent Musburger.
No, it's Jim. ABC. It's Jim that does the golf announcing for them. I forgot who it is. I'll remember in a second. But it'd be perfect for him to go out and basically be able to announce Peyton Manning's retirement right there. It would be a storybook ending, I think.
Well, you know, there are certainly some wonderful people in the city of Charlotte, mm-hmm. And North Carolina. It's a great place. Charlotte has really grown spectacularly over the last generation. So either city, I will be very happy for. You know, it's always fun and exciting to win something like this. It doesn't mean anything in the big picture of life, but it's fun.
Wow, boy, you better tell. Well, there's some Bronco fans that are going to be up. Bronco and Carolina fans. It doesn't really mean much.
You know, sports.
Wow, I got a friend who's an 85-year-old Patriots fan, and boy, does he eat, live, and breathe Boston sports. So, some of these people take this very seriously.
Well, you know, I grew up in Atlanta where we didn't have a professional football team, but we did have the Atlanta Falcons.
Right.
And
you didn't really have a professional baseball team either. You had the Braves.
No, they were terrible for many years.
I remember the joke for the Braves. It just applies to lots of teams. But the joke was they were giving away tickets on a radio station. First prize was 2 Braves tickets. Second prize was 4 Braves tickets. Third place was 8 Braves tickets.
That sounds about right. I remember one year growing up, I had tickets to a Falcon game late in the year, and I believe we had somewhere between 700 and 800 fans in attendance.
Wow.
It had to have been the last game of the year. It was an unusually cold day, and, you know,
they were going for their 4-12 season.
Oh, no, they weren't even that good. If I recall, it was pretty dreadful. And
the other joke is a guy gets 2 Falcon tickets, is going to go to the game, decides to change his mind, leaves them underneath his windshield wiper, and goes goes, watches a game in a bar, comes out, there's four tickets underneath the windshield wiper when he comes back.
That sounds about right. But you know what? I don't know that the state of North Carolina has ever won a championship at a professional level.
Like you said, they won lots of college ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, between Duke and the University of North Carolina.
Well, because there's only been professional sports down there for a fairly short time.
Relatively.
So like you said, for like the last 15 years, it really hadn't been a major sports market. I mean, it had been the home of NASCAR, but that's NASCAR in and of itself. It's its own sanctioning group. So yeah, no, the Panthers have not won before, and the Charlotte Hornets have not won anything at all. So yes, this would be the first professional title for Charlotte. You're correct.
So, you know, it would be a nice thing for them to win. So in either case, I will be happy. I will enjoy the Super Bowl commercials as much as anything else.
Yeah, that's the only time I'm going to a party tomorrow or a party today for the event. And sounds like it'll be, I'm looking forward to it.
Should be a lot of fun.
All right, Laguna Roundtable, KX935. You can reach us at LagunaRoundtable@gmail.com, at Righty Jim. And we're eventually we'll get Dr. Ari a Twitter so he can be reached out to also.
Yeah, those who know me understand the reality why I don't use Twitter. It's so hard for me to put anything in 140 characters, but
that would actually be true. You do tend to you are kind of verbose in your discussions
so. And my communications as well. So.
All right, we're gonna actually real quickly. Let's go over. I don't know if you were able to make it. I wasn't because of the poor weather last Sunday, but Mayor Steve Dickdraw kicked off the 2016 campaign season in Laguna Beach with an event at 7 Degrees last Sunday afternoon. And did you get a chance to make it over there?
I unfortunately did not have a chance to make it.
Yeah, I didn't either. I saw some photos. It looked like a great event. But that's the official unveiling in my book of the 2016 city council campaign.
How many seats do we have up
for
election?
We have two up
election.
This time. Okay, Mayor Dickdraw's is up and Bob Whalen's is up.
Okay.
Steve Dickdraw, that was his kickoff. He's running. I assume Bob Whalen is running. I have not spoken to him to actually verify that, but
I haven't heard either, but hopefully we can get both of them on the show.
That's planned for the that is definitely planned. Going forward, we'll definitely have Mayor Whalen or Mayor Dickdraw on, and we've tried to get Mayor Whalen on before. We've had some scheduling conflicts, haven't been able to pull it off. And if anybody else does pop up, we will be having later in the year, in the late summer, we will be doing a council series, same as we did in 2014, where we'll interview all of the viable candidates for the city council.
Great.
So even Eli will get on if he's going to run again. So it'll be interesting. We'll give him his 45 minutes. All right. Laguna Roundtable, KX935. Let's take a short break here and play a little bit of music. And we'll be back. We'll talk a little bit more in depth about the 2016 election update.
In my mind, I'm going to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Oh, I'm going to Carolina in my mind. Karen, she's a silver sun. You best walk her way and watch it shine. Watch her. Watch the morning come. A silver tear appearing now while I'm crying. Ain't I gone to Caroline again, mine? There ain't no doubt in no one's mind that love's the finest thing around. Whisper something soft. And hey, baby, the sky's on fire. I'm dying. Ain't I gone to Carolina in my mind? In my mind, I'm going to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? To just feel the moonshine. It is just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind. Till I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. dark and silent late last night. I think we might have heard the highway calling, geese in flight and dogs invited, and signs it might be omens say I'm going, I'm going, gone to Carolina in my mind. It's with till I'm on the dark side of the moon, and it looks like it goes on like this forever. Oh, you must forgive me. If I'm gone, Carolina, in my mind, can't you see the sunshine? I said, can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine just to hit me from behind? Till I'm gone to Carolina in my mind. Oh, I'm gone to Carolina in my mind.
All right, folks, we're back. Laguna Roundtable. Hope you enjoyed that. KX935. And don't forget, for the big game today at Big Fish 2-4, we will be having a KX935 party. Everybody can come down and watch the game on big screens, have drinks of whichever persuasion you like, whether alcoholic or non-alcoholic. And there will obviously be some food available there for purchase for everybody.
And the trolleys are running this weekend, aren't they?
Oh, very good. Oh, that's
so
good.
People have, you know, come down, have a drink, take the trolley back home.
Or two, or well, whatever you like. But yeah, we don't necessarily encourage it, or we don't discourage it either. But okay, so we've gone through the Iowa caucuses for the GOP and the debate from last night. We're not going to go over too much on. We have basically now we're looking at a New Hampshire preview. Let's kick off with the Democratic side. Hillary doesn't seem to be closing the gap on Bernie on feeling the burn. He's still up anywhere between 30 and 40 points. The average over the last five or six polls is about 20%. If Hillary goes, well, okay, Hillary technically won New Hampshire, or sorry, Iowa by whatever, 0.1% or something. But it basically, it's a virtual tie, though she gets extra delegates for winning. So with her near defeat in New Hampshire, or in Iowa, and her impending defeat in New Hampshire, what does this mean for Team Hillary and the Hillary campaign? Is this starting to bring back flashbacks of 2008, Dr. Ari?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it's going to bring back flashbacks of 2008. You know, the supposition is that after New Hampshire, the campaigns head south to South Carolina, and it will be interesting to see what kind of strength we have there. As you well know, President Bill Clinton was our first black president, and he still has a lot of strength and a lot of support within the African-American community in South Carolina. So it'll be interesting to see how the voters turn out for Hillary in 2016.
Well, why don't you run that first black president bit past Barack Obama and see, well, he likes that concept.
that was the supposition in 2000, excuse me, in 92 when President Clinton won. Nobody could have possibly foreseen that. Only, what was it, 16 years later, we would actually, or what, 16 years later?
26.
No, 12 years later, no.
16 years later.
Yeah, it had to be 16 years later. Sorry about that,
wow,
folks.
Wow, math in public. I did that on the air, and I actually got it right when I was estimating the turnout for the Iowa caucuses on Tuesday night, Monday night. But here, didn't do so well,
keep
folks,
in mind, this
years.
Is an 8 o'clock Sunday morning show, and math and 8 o'clock on Sunday morning don't always match up well together.
Well, you know what they say, math in public is always a very dangerous thing to
do. Well,
know.
It is, you know, and in all fairness, full disclosure, I took my calculus classes in college at 7:30 in the morning.
That's good for you.
Well, it is good for
me. Get that brain firing early.
Well, you would think so, but then when 1 week when the professor decided he was going to give me a pop quiz, I couldn't remember how to spell my name. So, you know, math.
Pop, P-O-P.
Yeah, pop quiz, yeah. But in any case, you know, going back to the issue, I think, you know, Hillary is going to kind of build some strength. It's really going to be interesting, though, to see what happens with Sanders, because out of Iowa, I think one of the most amazing statistics that I saw was that Bernie had obtained support from something like 84% of the youth vote in Iowa.
Yeah, the voters under 24, 28, he pulled like 4-1 against Hillary.
And I think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing this groundswell, or where we're seeing this groundswell of support for Bernie Sanders, is in young people. He's energizing them. You wouldn't think, you know, a 74-year-old guy from New York would be able to generate.
Well, Vermont, kind of, but yeah, grew up in Brooklyn.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Well, he was born in New York originally.
Right, yeah.
But in any case, so we're seeing a tremendous groundswell of support among young people for Bernie Sanders. I think among the many things that he's really speaking to them about is, you know, economic inequality.
Well, yeah, what does that say to you? What should we be grasping from the fact of the young people basically leaning towards Bernie and such numbers?
To me, it's fairly evident, because I see the same thing in my college classes, is that young people are having such a hard time working and paying for school. You know, I can't tell you how many students I lose because they don't have the money to pay tuition and pay for their textbooks.
But you're just at a junior college. I'm saying at junior college, generally the affordable option for those that can't afford 4-year school. You can do 2 years at a JUCO junior college, and then you move up to a 4-year school when you've reduced the amount of debt you're going to have to pay to Arizona State or Berkeley or whatever.
And that's truly wise on the part of our students, because they recognize that they can't absorb as much debt as they would have to at a 4-year institution. And by going to one of our community colleges, they oftentimes, I mean, we have more PhDs in our division than I see at my old stomping ground, which was at Arizona State University. So they're not compromising the quality of their education, but it's much more affordable for them. But even that's a real challenge when you're talking about, you know, young people, many of whom are just out of high school. You know, they're working their first jobs. They're making, you know, if not minimum wage, you can throw a rock and hit minimum wage. So they're really struggling with the cost of tuition, the cost of books, and all of the other expenses associated with going to school. So when we hear Bernie Sanders speak, it reaches out to them when he talks about the importance of receiving a college education, that a college education today has barely the economic equivalency or the job market equivalency of what we saw a generation or two ago of a high school diploma. So there's really that need to get some sort of college education under your belt, but we're saddling our students with so much financial debt. We don't have the low interest student loans that we used to have in previous generations. They're harder to come by. The costs have gone up so dramatically. So when Bernie Sanders is speaking about economic inequality and opportunities and the cost of education and making college for at least our first 2 years for students free or nearly free, it really, really touches them, and it speaks to them in a very visceral way. And I think that's very important.
Yeah. Also, I believe that Bernie is either a percentage point or two up, or is polling dead even with Hillary on women, which to me is a very large surprise also, or at least it was out of the Iowa caucuses.
Well, you know, economic issues are very important to women as well, especially when we have so many women who are the major breadwinner, so to speak, in their family, carbs notwithstanding, but the major breadwinner in their family. And so, you know, we need to make sure that we have well-educated women, that they're not earning 79 cents on a dollar when they are in the workforce.
But they're not. And by the way, the Fair Wage Act was passed in 1963, but Democrats tend to forget about that. So
we still see, you know what, we still see women who are doing.
You're right. Hillary paid, what, 83% for her Senate staff? She paid her women 83% on the dollar to the men?
Well, then that needs to be rectified, and she needs to be taken out to the woodshed
hypocrite,
on that.
Hypocrite. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that? I'm sorry. It's just an instinctive reflex with the Clinton.
That's okay. No, yeah, but I see your right leg kicking.
Thank you. I made the comment the other night, similar to what you were talking about. When we get down to South Carolina, you've got the first black president, Bill Clinton, going up against the first black president, first real black president, Barack Obama. It'll be interesting to see if Bernie gains momentum, what will happen in South Carolina as far as the African-American vote, which is very influential in the Democratic side of South Carolina. Will they jump on? Will they start feeling the burn because of his momentum? Will they also feel the burn because they'll remember how Bill Clinton treated Barack Obama in the South Carolina primaries, right, and the Ted Kennedy quote that got him in so much trouble that really swung South Carolina to Obama and started the Obama tidal wave that basically drowned Hillary in 2008. So it'll be very interesting. She's up right now, I think, more than Bernie is up on her in New Hampshire. And oddly enough, Nevada is a caucus process, and I can find very little polling data on it. It just does not seem to be being polled on at all. And any polling data goes back to, like, you know, December, which obviously would be way out of date because of how fast this thing has been changing. Yeah. So Nevada, to me, is a toss-up. I think Hillary will do well in Nevada because it's going to be a lot of Hispanics, a lot of union people. SEIU is very strong about unionizing all of the hotel workers in Vegas, which is the largest metropolitan area. I think you get a little bit more conservative when you get up in the north. I'm not sure how well socialism in Reno plays, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Same thing on the Republican side. Trump owns casinos and resort properties and housing units in Vegas. He's there a lot. He was at the SHOT Show a couple weeks ago, which is the largest firearms show. I think he's about 20 points up on Cruz in Nevada. Cruz, you know, Nevada, though, does have the evangelicals, but they're Mormon evangelicals.
Right.
They're not Christian Catholic evangelicals. I know Mormons are Christians, but they're different types of, you know, Mormonism is different from Christian conservatives. So that'll be interesting to see how we can do within the pulling the Mormons in, or if they're going to vote for Trump, but then owning casinos and being a Mormon, probably not a good vote getter. So Nevada'll be interesting. South Carolina, again, Trump is up by quite a bit over Cruz. I don't know why Cruz is not pulling better with the evangelicals. What will happen with Rubio, depending upon where he finishes in New Hampshire?
I think Rubio in all of this mix currently is the most intriguing person because he presents himself as the most adult-like in the room. I think he's got some interesting pictures. I think by and large, compared to the rest of the room, I mean, when we're talking about the dominant voices in the room, we're talking about,
I think Cruz
about Donald
Trump. Very, very adult. Cruz is, I mean, Trump is Trump. Cruz sounds adult. I mean, Rubio seems like, well, he's like somebody's frat brother. I mean, not that he's a party guy, but he just kind of, you know, he looks, you know, he's got the Ted Kennedy problem. He looks like he's too young to be president. He just looks like someone's kid brother, not like, you know, can you take Marco Rubio seriously? Does he look like a serious candidate?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. And when that's going to kind of play out, you're right in that. I think he's having a hard time in the Republican.
I don't have anything against Marco Rubio. I think he's a great guy, but I'm just kind of considering how that plays out. Now, he consistently polls better than anybody else in the Republican Party if you do a mock face-to-face against Hillary or Bernie. He's the best Republican candidate by the polling data to put up against any Democrat for the presidency. So you got to look at that, too. Is that something that as people start going down farther down the primary tree, start thinking about, well, you know, I like Trump, but, you know, Rubio's more electable and I want a Republican in the White House. And yeah, maybe Rubio can do what Trump's doing. And, you know, I really need someone who's Republican in the White House and maybe I'll need to vote for Rubio instead of Trump.
Well, that might well fuel a movement towards Marco Rubio. Right. We'll see how that kind of plays out. I know there's going to be some challenge with him building strength within the Hispanic community because of his stand in immigration. He still, you know, comes from, you know, from Florida, where the Cuban voters are very different than what we see out west here, where more of our Hispanic voters are of Mexican descent or South or Central American descent,
right?
But certainly not as much in Cuba.
Right. The Cuban vote, the Cuban immigrants tend to be a tad, or actually more than a tad, significantly more conservative than the Hispanic immigrants do,
yeah,
because of the whole anti-Castro and the anti-communism. They have the personal touches with that. The Hispanics out here have no touch with communism and they come out of corruption, but not a communist corruption, a oligarchic corruption, shall we say,
yeah,
rather than the, you know, all of those Cubans, somebody's got a brother, cousin, uncle, or friend of a brother, cousin, uncle who spent time in a Castro jail or has been killed by Castro or has been tortured by Castro. The Hispanics don't have here in California, and the Southwest do not have the same lifestyle, don't have the same life experiences.
Yeah, very, very different experiences. I think so, you're right in that.
Does also the viability maybe in the end help Hillary out? Because this is becoming more, you look at Bernie, you look at Hillary, yeah, great, I want free everything and I want $19 trillion more in taxes. But on a 50-state basis, how well does Bernie really play in 50 states? How does Bernie play in Montana?
Well, that's
how does Bernie play in Arizona? How does Bernie play in Florida? How does Bernie play in Texas? How does Bernie play in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Colorado, Indiana, which are now the big swing states?
I'm not sure that he plays particularly well in many of those states. Those are generally red states, and I don't know that they would go towards any Democrat.
Well, not Ohio, not Pennsylvania, not Indiana. Those are all swing states.
But I think one of the big things is when you see Hillary on stage, and it doesn't matter whether she's with Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders or just she and Bernie Sanders on the same stage. I think the reality is when you see Hillary, like her or hate her, Hillary knows policy. She knows foreign leaders. She has been involved as a first lady for a number of years, taking a leadership role. She was a senator very briefly, I think just one term in New York. Was she two-term?
Yeah. Oh, well, no, she was term and a half.
Term and
a
half, okay.
2000 and 2008, she left okay. When Obama asked her to be Secretary of State.
So then she joined the Obama administration in 2008 as Secretary of State.
But she did 8 years in the Senate.
And she, she's got tremendous relationships in place with foreign leaders. She understands the major players. She understands their concerns, their problems. She has, whatever disagreements she may have with them, but they know who she is. She's a known entity. When you see her on stage, she has a certain expertise that is always on display. Not that, I see your face. Not that you will necessarily like her positions on that or even like Hillary on a personal level. Yeah, okay, the laughter in the studio, okay. But I think...
I can't really repeat what I was thinking, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. That's why we have our disclaimer at the beginning of the show.
Yes, exactly.
But, but the reality is that she knows policy. And I think from that standpoint,
right.
she's tremendous. She's tremendous on a number of levels. But she's also a very polarizing figure because she has been involved for so many years at so many different levels, beginning with her husband and some of the challenges that he faced. I think Hillary has
wow, challenges he faced.
Well, or created, let's be fair.
Yeah, created.
Two
words, Bill, zip it, okay? And that can take for whatever part of it.
You're not talking about his mouth, right?
You can interpret that however you darn well wish, but just plain zip it, Bill.
Yeah.
And, okay, but the thing that I was thinking about Hillary the other day or the other night was, there's the 10,000-hour rule that if you do something for 10,000 hours, you can become an expert at it.
Right.
Hillary's done 10,000 hours of politics. I will give her that. A, she's not a very good campaigner. She's not Bill. She doesn't extrude warmth. She doesn't extrude lovability. She tries to tell the grandma stories. And you almost wonder if it's like, let's script this out and let's have the kid run in and I can say that this happened and I can say that this happened. And wow, I'll look really cool at that. But, she's got the 10,000 hours. But does she really have the competence after those 10,000 hours? She got to run the foreign policy in Libya. Libya is an unmitigated mess, not to mention 4 dead Americans. Okay. ISIS has gone rampant during her time as secretary. Well, okay, really not as her time. But the foundations of ISIS began when she was Secretary of State. And the Obama administration, of which she likes to tie herself to, has done very little to solve the problem of ISIS, as the 14 dead Americans in San Bernardino will attest to, or could have attested to. Russia is on the march. It's basically taking the Crimea. It's threatening the Ukraine. It's putting pressure on Western Europe. And with fact, Ash Carter's top 10 list or top 5 list this week of foreign threats, Russia number 1, not Iran. Okay. Right. Russia, Iran, North Korea, and then ISIS was listed as the 5th largest threat. China. And then ISIS was the 5th largest national security threat. Russia number 1. Russia with the reset button that Hillary did. Okay. So you talk about experience, but do you really talk about a little bit of competence with Hillary?
You know, I think the competence is generally there.
One of the things
that we have to keep in mind.
Let's play Jim's favorite quiz.
Okay.
Please name me three accomplishments of Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State campaign.
First of all, after 8 years of the Bush foreign policy. After 8 years of the Bush-Cheney foreign policy team in place, and let's not forget our good old friend Donald Rumsfeld.
He was Secretary of State.
Having a leader like Hillary as Secretary of State reconstruct Humpty Dumpty after he was kicked off the wall and shattered was a major undertaking. And what Hillary did, as important as anything else, was rebuild relationships with some of
Unfortunately, I know where she put Humpty's head when she put it back together. Wow. And that's part of the problem with it. It was not an anatomically correct Humpty by the time she finished with it. Okay? It had been neutered and had some other problems with it. And Vladimir Putin loved that reset button. Okay? I'm sure he went out to Staples and bought one right after that reset button. Okay, because that gave him full caveat to go out and do whatever he darn well pleased.
But when we look at these things, and we have to be realistic.
Tell the people of Crimea that these are things.
But when we look at these things, we have to understand also that force, which seems to be the go-to way too often of our conservative friends on the right. War is not always the answer.
For those of you not watching on TV, I'm playing the world's smallest violin with Dr. Harvey right now.
He is, and a very high-pitched violin as well. We've got dogs coming from all around.
Maybe it was just shrillery that's doing it, but go ahead.
That was shrillery. Okay, I hadn't heard that one before, but I appreciate that. But, you know, I think it's important to also recognize that diplomatic relations in this world are paramount. We're going to have, if we're going to defeat ISIS in this world, we have to have cooperation. And we need to put pressure on some of the nations who can put their military and their populations behind it. We need the Muslim world. We need our own Muslim community here in the United States.
Well, I will certainly give you credit. Hillary does have good connections in Saudi Arabia. She's taken how many hundreds of millions of dollars in for the Clinton Foundation from the Saudis?
No question.
So she certainly knows them very well.
Absolutely.
And they've paid her off very well over the years.
Because the Saudis recognize the good work that the Clinton Foundation is doing. I'm just curious. What's the Bush Foundation, the George W. Bush Foundation doing? I mean, other than, you know, random pieces of bad artwork.
I believe they're focusing on his continuing effort to reduce AIDS in Africa. Everybody who basically, if you want to have the...
So a good healthcare initiative.
Well, it's reducing the AIDS in Africa, getting the drugs into there and the prevention aspects, not necessarily health care. They're not like curing diabetes in Africa, but it's the AIDS project in Africa. Outside of that, unlike Bill Clinton, he doesn't go around the state. He doesn't go around putting himself on stage and trying to basically take the spotlight. He's very happy being an ex-president. He doesn't have the narcissistic tendencies.
And I'm very happy with him being an ex-president.
He doesn't have the narcissistic tendencies of Bill Clinton to where he's got to be on the stage and on the spotlight. Because it helps him collect the babes, but you know.
Good.
Geez, I don't know. Are we running out of time, or are we getting close to where we should be wrapping this up? You think
we probably should, out of respect for our listenership.
Well, and for Jason Fett, who's got Full English Breakfast coming up next. We don't want to impinge on his time too much either.
Listen, if we can save the world from English breakfast, we would be doing. Oh! We would be doing everybody.
Hi, Jason.
A favor.
Jason over here.
Yeah, thanks.
Dr. Ari said that I didn't.
Not.
I love you and Miss Pickles.
No,
so.
Not Jason's. Full English breakfast. Excuse me, my mouth stopped working for a moment there. But
maybe you need a full English breakfast to help that out.
One of the last things I need is a full English breakfast. I've spent enough time in the United Kingdom to understand that an English breakfast and life expectancy are not necessarily working in concert with our
bodies. All
right,
so let's wrap this thing up. Tuesday night, New Hampshire primary. You can catch me on Radio America Network. At Righty Jim, you can catch where that is, but www.radioamerica.com. I'll be doing commentary with the Chad Benson Show from the 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock hours Pacific time. Dr. Ari and I will be probably back next week if somebody doesn't pull us off the air for all of our commentary this week.
No, I don't think we did too badly today. So far, so good. Anyway.
Go Broncos, and everybody have a good Sunday and a good Super Bowl out there. Enjoy.
And just to give you a quick update on coming events, late this month, the last week in February, the Democratic Party is going to be having its annual convention in San Jose, the California Democratic Party. There are going to be a lot of wonderful speakers up there. I'm going to be in attendance, so hopefully I can get at least a few short interviews or some snippets with some of our national Democratic
leaders. That's the only redeeming part of that last sentence.
Is which part?
Getting some clips for the show.
Oh, getting some clips for the show. It's going to be a tremendous event. Hopefully both Hillary and Bernie are going to be there. Have a fun week.
Yeah, not happening probably, but hopefully that'd be great.
No, I think they will be. So have a great week. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and we will hopefully have you back again next Sunday. Take care.
I'm Ari, and I'm putting Make America Great Again on the table. With so much air being devoted to Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump's proclamations, Make America Great Again, it's worth considering what made America great in the first place. Our founding fathers and mothers were children of the Enlightenment, an age of reason that began early in the 18th century, the century of our nation's birth. The principal goals of Enlightenment thinkers were liberty, progress, reason, tolerance, fraternity, and ending the abuses of the church and state. Let's look first at part of a brilliant and historic document that became part of our national legacy on July 4th, 1776. I'm speaking of course, the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This has been called one of the best-known sentences in the English language. Perhaps most importantly, the passage came to represent a moral standard to which the United States should strive. It is part of what truly makes America great. After winning a hard-fought battle for independence, these wise men wrote our Constitution and quickly amended it with the Bill of Rights, which comprised the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution. Here's my personal favorite, and probably the favorite of our founding fathers and mothers, since they put it right at the top. The First Amendment begins with, "Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." Our great nation was founded as a place where religious freedom could be enjoyed by one and all. Certainly the founding fathers and mothers were themselves shaped by Judeo-Christian values, but they had the wisdom and the prescience to recognize that not only did that mean we have the right to have a relationship or not with a deity as our conscience deems fit, but that there are many paths to spiritual enlightenment, and that each person must have the same right and the freedom to do so according to their personal beliefs. If we are to be great, we need to be true to our core values as Americans. We need to be true to the vision of our founding fathers. We are great when we honor the Declaration of Independence, and we are great when we understand the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Donald Trump, you say you will make America great again? Then you need to perhaps begin by reflecting upon what made America great in the first place. I'm Ari, and I just put Make America Great Again on the table.